Welcome to DFD Performance Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. And this is the show where we break down popular science into easily digestible and actionable information to give you the blueprint to be a high performer in your life. Today, I'm joined by TFD dietitians Ryan Hassel and Lauren Nash, and we are having a healthy discussion about whether or not calorie deficits are real. This conversation was sparked by a video of a registered dietitian who posted a video saying that she does not believe in calorie deficits, and this caused quite the debate amongst the medical and nutrition community. In this episode, we give our thoughts on it, we discuss the importance of language in communicating science, why using language such as calorie deficit is just not appropriate for certain clinical populations, the real science about calories and energy balance, and we discuss the big issue that is at the root cause of this entire debate that no one is really talking about. This is a really good one, so let's get to it. All right, welcome to another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. I'm joined by Lauren Nash and Mr. Dojo, Ryan Hassel, the mustache, the mullet. And today we're going to be talking about something that's really cool. It's actually something we've been going back and forth for a while. I'm sure you guys have probably seen the video that we're going to be referencing, but we don't need to play it and you'll probably understand it and see it once we talk about it. There's a video that's been going around social media that's caused a bit of a stir and a bit of a rift, I would say, between, I'd say, the non-diet community and the diet community. And what's been going on is that this person went out and they pretty much said they don't support a calorie deficit. They said, I don't support a calorie deficit for all of these reasons, and I don't ever think we should be talking about it. And there's all these negatives that come from talking about or preaching this to clients or patients. And then a whole rift of people have come out, doctors, other nutritionists, dietitians, people who aren't even really should be commenting, have been commenting about it, saying, no, you're completely wrong. It goes against the science. It's an interesting video, but it brings up a much more interesting debate, I think. And I think if you can sort of put your emotions aside and look at this objectively and talk about it openly, you can kind of crack open and start to see this really, really big problem that no one is really talking about. So that's what we're going to go over in this podcast today. So I want to get Loz and Dojo to give you guys their perspectives on this, and they've got very interesting perspectives. Loz, as I'm sure many of you guys would have probably heard, we've spoken about it on the podcast before. Loz has had history. She was a figure skater, so she got put through all this. Same when I was a really competitive jiu-jitsu athlete, we all developed disordered eating and eating disordered behavior. And it's bad. Like, it's a real thing that happens, and I don't think you can ignore it in any aspect of sport or life. But, sorry, phone went off. But Loz is going to give her perspective from, because it's very interesting. Like, Loz is obviously very well educated. She works on the team. She works with all of our athletes, but she has that background. Dojo, for all of you guys know, listening to the podcast, very, very good, very, very deep in the science, very, very good with science. So it's very cool to see these two views and even hear this within the team. And then we'll talk about it, especially when you listen to Dojo talk about it, how we kind of reconcile this when we're doing this with our clients, right? Like, you need to be mindful of these disordered eating disordered behaviors. Then how do you take something that's almost yin and yang and then let it happen? But let's start, Loz, I'll throw it over to you. Just give us your thoughts and your opinions about this video. What did you think? And let's go through and break it down from your perspective.
Definitely. Thanks, Jordy. And I think, yeah, as you mentioned, it is an interesting kind of perspective, and you do have to put your emotions aside. And I think, of course, given my past experience and now as a qualified health professional, you do have to separate your personal experience and your emotion from the topic, because, you know, you would never preach your views or your opinions on a client or a follower or, you know, a friend even. So it is kind of that, okay, science versus emotion. And, you know, I would never kind of let my experience influence someone else, but in a way it does help to give me a better understanding and appreciation of, you know, people's experiences. And we do work with people that have kind of maybe negative relationships with food or their body. And I think it is something that needs to be addressed. And I like that we're doing this podcast, because I think the more it's spoken about, the less kind of taboo it can be, in a way, because there is a lot of negative connotations around calorie deficit, but then you also get the crowd that preach calorie deficits all the time. And I think, yeah, if I'm kicking this off, regardless of your opinion on the topic, whether you're pro calorie deficit or anti calorie deficit, in the whole prospect of losing weight, you literally cannot argue with the science. If you want to lose weight, you have to follow a calorie deficit. So there's just no ifs or buts about whether this approach works. It does work. I think labeling it as a type of diet, which I think was mentioned in this video, probably not, you know, necessarily the best way to label it, because to me a type of diet is keto or vegan or gluten-free, but you can actually be in a calorie deficit whilst following any of those types of diets. So I think, you know, even again, this is going to stem into my opinion in terms of language around food. A calorie deficit isn't necessarily a type of diet, but simply a tool that we can use to manipulate our body weight, to manipulate body composition, or whatever the end goal is. And some people will probably come from the mindset of, we shouldn't preach calorie deficits because we don't need to lose weight and you need to love your body and X, Y, and Z. But, you know, calorie deficit doesn't need to be extreme. It could be something very, very minor. And for the reality is, I think, Jordy, you're going to mention, is that obesity is a huge problem, and sometimes a calorie deficit is actually what we need, because there's no denying that a calorie deficit definitely has its place. But yeah, I think personally, I don't really like the term calorie deficit. However, it doesn't change the fact that I acknowledge that it's the only way that people are going to lose weight. And I think given my experience, and I'm sure many other people would resonate with it, is that the term calorie deficit can be associated with, you know, following a diet or being really restrictive and having negative relationships around food or MyFitnessPal and tracking macros, calories, reading the back of packets. To me, calorie deficit can be really associated with all of those types of things. However, it doesn't have to be like that. And I think something that's, you know, really changed my mind about it is we work with obviously varied athletes, especially myself. We've got endurance athletes, CrossFit athletes. For the most part, calorie deficit is not what we need. We need to be in a calorie surplus to fuel all of that training. However, with our combat athletes, matter of the fact is these people need to make weight. And to make weight, you need to be in a calorie deficit. However, the approach that we come from is not necessarily to look a certain way or to, you know, they're fat and they need to lose weight. It's okay, we've got to strategically manipulate body weight via a calorie deficit so that this person can achieve their goals, weigh in, compete. This is their sport, this is their goals. A calorie deficit is therefore in line with their goals. So I think time and place, perspective, context, all these things come into place when we're talking about calorie deficits, because for some audiences might be quite taboo, don't need to worry about it. However, for weight-based sports, jockeys, combat athletes, weightlifters, powerlifters, chances are at some stage you're going to need to be in a calorie deficit to make weight. However, it's a performance thing. It's, you know, it's a goal. We do it in a healthy way. Especially I can speak for all of us on the TFD team, a calorie deficit, they don't even realize they're in a calorie deficit. You know, we don't preach numbers because again, you can become really attached mentally with being in a deficit, counting calories. I think that's the negative side. So in terms of the video, how she doesn't agree with calorie deficits, I understand and respect that opinion, because personally, it makes me feel uncomfortable. I never really use the term calorie deficit. I don't like the word. I don't really like using it, but a lot of my athletes are on a calorie deficit because that's in line with their goals and that's how we're going to achieve their goals. But I think, you know, coming back to the video, audience and context is really important, because if you're speaking to a group of people recovering from disordered eating, you probably wouldn't want to use the word calorie deficit. However, if you're talking to a bunch of bodybuilders, their favorite word is probably calorie deficit. So I think it, you know, really resonates with some people, doesn't resonate with others. But in terms of the video, she was very passionate against calorie deficits, and I understand because of her following. And, you know, if we're going to quickly talk about intuitive eating, I think intuitive eating is amazing. And, you know, over the last few years for me personally, having a really negative relationship with food and calorie deficits and whatnot, you know, I'm so proud now that I just eat intuitively. I'm so in tune with my body and it's so awesome. And I love that for everyone, and it makes me happy when my clients, you know, kind of get there as well. However, not everyone can eat intuitively, and some people need that structure or they want to count calories. And you can't deny the fact that a calorie deficit or counting calories is a great tool for some people. So I think, again, it really comes back to your audience and if this message is relative to the people listening, because everyone is different. Everyone approaches things differently, works well on different aspects. And, you know, again, even though personally I've had negative experiences with food in the past and I don't like the word calorie deficit, doesn't change the fact that I'm a professional, I'm a health professional, and I acknowledge the science is there. Calorie deficits work. So therefore I'm not necessarily on the fence, but personally don't like the term calorie deficit, but I still implement it in my practice daily.
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm going to throw it over to you, Jojo, to go over now, and let's talk about what you thought when you watched the video. What were some of the things that immediately went through your mind when you watched it? And then when you watched it back again and put some notes down, what did you think?
Yeah, so I guess my kind of like knee-jerk reaction was probably similar to what a lot of people, I guess, would have thought. Like I'm certainly definitely a believer in like intuitive eating. Like it's a real thing that's really helpful, but I think she came off really strong against some things that we know, as Loz said, are like they're known to be true. So the fact that we need a deficit to facilitate weight loss, some of these ideas that kind of get thrown around as being like debatable that aren't really, I think she kind of like went a bit too heavily against them. But I think like after listening to Loz talk about it and like having thought about it a bit, it makes sense in the context of her audience. And I think that's probably something that will probably come up a lot, and Loz talked about it, but it'll probably come up a lot throughout the course of this podcast, is like it really depends on like the goal of the target audience that you're talking to. So for her audience, that kind of makes sense, but for other audiences it might not. So like if we look at like clinical patients, for example, someone who's looking to have like secondary prevention, or like prevent like a secondary like heart attacks, so someone who's already had some sort of history of heart disease, they're at risk of having another heart attack, they don't want to die, they're going to be given advice around particular diet changes, things like reducing I guess what we could consider like fast food or like high sodium foods, alcohol, smoking, those sort of lifestyle changes would be advised. That's kind of like restrictive in a way, that wouldn't really follow intuitive eating principles, but it will help them to prevent having some sort of like medical complication down the road. So like in a clinical situation, it kind of makes sense to be a little bit more restrictive in that setting. And then as Loz said, like for particular athletes, we've got combat athletes that we work with regularly, certain types of weightlifting, other like Olympic sports, like rowing and stuff. These athletes have to like weigh a particular weight in order to compete, for whether that's to like reduce risk of injury, to like kind of like level the playing field. Whatever it is, those weight categories exist. And so like the athletes have to like either like maintain or in some cases reduce their weight in order to make those weight targets. And so a calorie deficit is what they will kind of use to facilitate that. Now, obviously there's like sort of healthy ways to go about this and unhealthy ways to go about it, but it isn't the case that just having a calorie deficit is like purely bad in these cases. And it also doesn't have to be the case that a calorie deficit is like particularly restrictive in either of these cases either. Like there are ways, and certainly we try and use them as much as possible, where you can eat like a calorie controlled, or like you can limit your total calories, but still eat like a huge range of foods, have a completely varied diet, but still hit these energy targets. So like you're not having to restrict certain foods out of your diet and stuff to still hit those targets. Now, I think I kind of just want to go over a couple of points. There are some things that kind of just get like repeated on social media. They're kind of like, I guess, like parroted points. People maybe don't understand them fully, or like they've heard them. I don't want to say they're like lazy talking points, but they're kind of like buzzwords that get thrown around and they appeal to a certain audience. So like this idea that like losing weight is going to make your metabolism wind down, and you're going to like eat a bowl of ice cream, you're going to put all the weight back on because your metabolic rate is now so low because you've just destroyed it from like chronic dieting. There's been like research into this, and it happens. Like your body will respond to calorie deficits by reducing your metabolic output, but it's not 100, like we don't completely understand this process yet. So it's not accurate to say like if you restrict your food intake, your body's going to have like a stress response and go into starvation mode. Like these are buzzwords that aren't really true. Like it's entirely possible that reduction in metabolic rate might just be like proportional to the amount of metabolic tissue you're losing. So like your cells use energy like day to day, and like that accounts for a big chunk of your total daily energy expenditure. It's just the chemical reactions going on in your cells each day. As you lose weight and you're losing these cells, losing fat cells, sometimes losing a bit of muscle mass, whatever, this like reduction in body tissue is going to lead to reductions in metabolic rate. And like it's still debated whether or not that reduction in metabolic rate is kind of like proportional to just that, or if there's other things going on. But we kind of don't understand that well enough to be making these strong claims of like, yeah, if you like end up on a like your body's unsure if you're like on a desert island or whatever, and it's going to like try and go into starvation mode. Like, I don't think that that's like an accurate thing to say. And like, we kind of see this anecdotally in like, I guess like a good example or way to think about this is there's a thing that we have in like the nutrition community, especially in like a clinical setting, called parental nutrition, which is like, some of you may have heard of this, some of you may not. It's basically just like you're injecting nutrients literally straight into someone's veins. It's like you put a drip in directly into the bloodstream and you're just dropping nutrients in, whether that's like they're basically have all the nutrients they need. So micros, macros, everything. So if you give two people the same amount of nutritional input via these like methods, they will end up at like the same weight, and like that doesn't slowly start going up over time because their metabolic rate drops or whatever. Like, people can stay on TPN for long periods of time, and the same amount of TPN will like maintain the same amount of weight even if they drop initially. So like, there are some examples of this just like not being the case in real life, and it's definitely something that needs to be explored more before we can make any like hard claims of whether or not this starvation mode thing exists. But yeah, we like, it's just not quite there yet in terms of making these claims. And then the last thing is kind of like the idea that calorie deficits just don't work in general. And as Laura's already said, like, we know that we need calorie deficits to lose weight, but they are also like proven to be helpful for preventing certain, you know, like health conditions, like people that are pre-diabetic. It's pretty well known, like weight loss is just as effective in preventing people that are pre-diabetic. So they're already like, their blood sugar is high, but they're not quite diabetic yet. Weight loss of like 5 to 10% can reduce their risk of actually becoming fully diabetic, just as much as like certain diabetic medications can. So like, there's definitely context where like weight loss and a calorie deficit can be helpful from a health point of view as well. I think it really just comes down to, again, like, what is the goal of the person? Are they doing it for health reasons, for performance reasons, for sport, or are they doing it because they're unhappy with themselves, because they have more of a dysmorphic approach? And in that context, is diet even like the solution to the problem, or is it more like should they be seeking like counseling, like more like a psychological approach, or like a body positivity point of view, in order to like improve that aspect of their life first before they try and like, you know, put a band-aid on a bullet hole by like restricting the diet to try and make themselves happier? Yeah, that's kind of like where my thoughts are at on it, Jordy. I'll hand it back over to you to kind of give us your final closing thought.
What I want to say first is what I like about the video, because there are a few things I want to say that I don't love about it, but then talk about the bigger issue. I think the fact that she is doing that and she's speaking to a very specific crowd is really important. And if you're a health professional on social media, you need to do that. That's something that you need to do. You need to talk to a very specific crowd, because when you talk to a specific crowd, you're almost sticking up and giving that crowd a voice. You're giving that crowd a crowd of voice on social media. You're highlighting their issues. You're bringing more attention to it. You're encouraging them to go get help. You're offering help to that audience. That's a really, really good thing. She's championing her audience, which is really good. She's obviously very, very passionate about it. Like, she's very, very passionate, and you need that. You need that if you're going to be a health professional. You can't really get in this and like be, yeah, I don't really like it, because you're not going to do it. If you want to work with people and you want to make meaningful difference in their life, you have to be passionate so your audience resonates with your message and puts it in action. So that's what I really, really like about it. The things I don't love about that, and when we get really specific with our audience, is not so much with anything that she said or anything particularly about this person. It's social media in general. And in today's world, when we look at TikTok and Instagram specifically, the way that those algorithms are created now and the way that they work, they favor video content and they favor things like reels, and it's very easy for content to go viral. So all of a sudden you have this situation where you've got someone talking to a very specific audience, but then that video goes viral, and then all of a sudden that message is in front of a lot of people where that message shouldn't have been in front of. And that makes a lot of sense why there is so much friction on social media when we look at these type of things, because even if you just look at the numbers in Australia, when we look at eating disordered it's estimated now that 4% of the population at any one time have an eating disorder in Australia. Now, when you compare that to the percentage of the population that are overweight or obese, that's 67%. So 2 in 3 adults in Australia are either overweight or obese. So you've taken this person who's talking to a population of just 4% of the country and then say that that video goes viral and it's popping up in front of all these audiences. When there's 2 in 3 people who are overweight or obese, there's a very good chance that you're going to get that message in front of either a health professional or someone who is suffering directly or someone who indirectly knows someone that's suffering. And you're going to probably start triggering a lot of people because your message, like Loz says, is using language that isn't appropriate for those audiences. It's appropriate for that very small population, that 4%, and it'll do them a lot of good. But when we start putting those messages in front of the other 67%, the people like Dojo saying that weight loss, whether you agree with it or not, you cannot argue with the science that a calorie deficit will improve markers of health for people who are in that. That is a completely different message to what you tell someone who has a full-blown eating disorder and you're trying to recover from with them and you're trying to take them through this process of just giving their body enough food and enough nourishment to get them back to living their best life. It's a completely different conversation. And this is really where this big problem lies. The big problem lies is that now in social media, we have this really unregulated system where the algorithms are so primed for video content that everyone's churning it out. And you're getting a lot of really good practitioners that are very dug in their niche and it's churning out, going viral, and it's getting in front of people that is not their audience. And this is what's causing all this tension. There's just so much tension. Like our message that we preach at TFD could get in front of people in the eating disorder space. And I would be horrified if that was the case, because I would not want what we preach when it comes to losing weight or cutting weight or doing anything. I wouldn't want them to even hear it, even if it wasn't going to be directly negative. I just wouldn't want them to be around that information for their mental health sake. But inadvertently, if one of our video goes viral, I can't control that. And so there's this ethical and moral question of, well, how far does your responsibility as a health professional, how far does it go? How far does it go in this weird social media world that we're all trying to navigate? Because I think as long as these videos, and we've got TikTok and Instagram and YouTube and video content where people are freely talking to their niche and speaking their mind and really directing a message to a specific audience, you're always going to get in front of people that aren't your intended audience. And there's always going to be friction and you're always going to get these debates that come up. And it's not like anyone's right or wrong. This is the thing. No one is right or wrong. When you look, it just depends what seat you're sitting in. If you're sitting in the ED seat, the video, the girl in the video is completely 100% right. If you're a bodybuilder, like Loz says, she's completely 100% wrong because it goes against what you're trying to do and your fundamental beliefs for your life right now. So it's a very, very interesting position that we're in. I think this is a problem we need to talk about more. It's something no one really talks about, is this responsibility of health professionals on social media. Do we need to clarify at the start of every single video, hey, this is for this? Do we need to do that? Or is that something that is it just assumed upon? Is it just assumed upon in the unspoken rules of social media, or when we finish university, that we should just know it? No one really knows. Like, no one can really give me a good answer. And I guarantee if I went and spoke to universities about it, there wouldn't be this conversation happening, but it needs to happen because we're going to continue seeing these opposite sides, which in their own right are doing very, very, very good work in their own fields, just continuing to be arguing and going against each other. And the sad thing, from a bigger outside perspective, it makes everyone look bad. It makes it very confusing. It makes it very confusing when people on the outside who don't understand the little niche details that everyone's arguing about, they're just going, oh, no one in this field knows what they're talking about. He's saying that, you know, calorie deficits are good. She's saying that they're bad. This guy's saying eat liver. This guy's saying just eat plants. Like, what do I believe? These guys are meant to be the experts and they can't even agree. So it's like, where do we draw the line on this? And it's a conversation we need to have more. And I'd love to hear, as final points, like, what are your guys' thoughts? Like, where do we go with this? This is a very weird thing that most people don't talk about. So what do you do in the social media world as a health professional?
Yeah, I think, you know, even though this podcast, the kind of idea of it was, yeah, the calorie deficit versus intuitive eating thing, but I think you've really highlighted, Jordy, that the underlying issue here is neither. It's social media and how the information is portrayed. And social media is a funny thing because obviously without it, we probably wouldn't have the success that we do, and we wouldn't be able to reach clients, potential clients, you know, just educate other people, help other people. And I think most dietitians or health professionals would start their Instagram account or whatever social media account it is with the intention of helping people and providing legitimate information. However, as you mentioned, when you have people in their respective niches preaching their opinion versus their opinion, if someone follows both of them, then they're even more confused because they think, okay, well, I respect both of these people, but they're kind of telling me different things. Who do I understand? And, you know, I'm a qualified health professional with, I would say, a pretty good knowledge of health and what's right and what's wrong. But even sometimes I see things on Instagram and I think, what the heck, is that right? Why didn't I know that? Or that's not what I know. And I can't even imagine what it would be like for people who don't have the education or don't have that contextual information behind them. And I see it all the time, you know, friends will send me videos on Instagram or clients or family members. And I just feel sorry for people in a way in this day and age, because too much of a good thing can be a bad thing. And I think too much information can be a bad thing because it's confusing as hell. But I think, yeah, it's a really good conversation to have. And I hope, you know, other health professionals listening to this maybe can just take a step back and think, okay, you know what? Who is my audience? Let's acknowledge that, okay, yes, I still want to stay within my niche, but maybe just making sure that my content is still appropriate or for people maybe outside of my niche, or, you know, I guess then again, it comes back to the reader and how they interpret things. So, you know, it's not just on the health professional, but it's a really interesting topic to have because no doubt most people's health information and dietary choices would be formed from Instagram.
Yeah. And I think, like, as well, probably the main thing to kind of take away from this is it's just important to, like, make sure you're using the right language. Like, if you have a target audience in mind, like, that's fine. But to come out and make, like, blanket statements that are, it depends, right? If you're trying to, like, kick up a, maybe you're trying to create some tension to get some drama and some more clicks or whatever, but, like,
you're trying to get TFD's attention so that
I feel like if we just can, like, start using more, like, accurate language, or, like, rather than just saying, like, this is all bad or this is all good, like, talking about it more from, like, the context of where you're coming from. So, like, calorie deficits in an eating disorder sense are like not helpful, or like that sort of stuff is probably way more effective and probably a lot more clear for the target audience, especially for people that don't have a good understanding or as much of an understanding as us as health professionals who have, like, studied this stuff for years. Like, we can kind of, like, read between the lines when people are talking about this stuff, but maybe the average person can't. And so rather than, like, creating these big divides by using big blanket statements, we can start to be a little bit more specific about what we're talking about and who we're talking to kind of avoid some of that confusion.
Yeah, I think final points is that, yeah, that's really important. Like what Dojo said, language is important. And like we said at the start, objectivity and emotions are probably not two things you want to mix. Like in many different facets of life, it's very good. Like you can be a very emotional person. That's absolutely fine. When it comes to science and people's health, yes, you need to have some degree of empathy and everything else, but you need to be objective when it comes to science. And like Dojo is saying, when we talk about science and we talk about what we know is truth and what we know is maybe not so understood, even though there's not a lot of, hey, absolute hard truths, there is black and white within that. And there, it's black and white once you explain it and you explain it adequately. And what we see a lot here is that there's a lot of half truths that are thrown out, a lot of kind of quarter truths that are thrown out to push a certain agenda. And so language is very important when we're talking about topics, say like calorie deficits. It's important to explain a calorie deficit is this, it's a state of energy. And yes, it's not inherently good, nor is it bad. And then you can put it in a contextual, very specific scenario where for this person, this may be very bad, but for this person, it may be very wrong. And I think as health professionals, that's where our due diligence really lies, is being able to make that very clear and then being able to put that contextual significance to place for the individual. And that individual may be a big audience, but you should be able to present that information where it's very obvious for that audience that it's very applicable to them. If someone outside of that audience listened to that, it's not applicable for them. And I think that's where a lot of this triggering, a lot of this, I guess, arguing comes from, is because people don't do that. People don't do that, like Dojo said, because there's ulterior motives that is trying to cause a clickbait storm. They're trying to sell something. They're trying to push a certain agenda or whatever. That doesn't happen. And I think if you are a qualified health professional and you've got a degree and you're paying fees to be part of an association, it's probably in your best interest to be doing that, to be making this very clear. You can talk to an audience, but you need to be very clear and objective when it comes to the science.
Very true. You know what, talking about social media and information and stuff, I actually just unfollowed this morning some doctor that I followed on Instagram, because to be quite honest with you, obviously I respect doctors, they're incredible, their knowledge is insane, but the amount of stuff he was posting about diet and nutrition, and as far as I'm aware, doesn't have any qualifications in the space. And I was reading these statements and I felt scared reading them. And I was just thinking, what on earth, you know, I don't want to open my Instagram feed, read a post and be absolutely horrified, you know, as to what something's going on in my health. And I think, you know, as well, if you ever see or you see that type of stuff on social media, don't entertain it. You know, if it doesn't resonate with you or if it confuses you more, I think just take that step and unfollow or block or try and really tailor your feed, because I know suggested things pop up and you can't help what gets shown in your face, but you do also have control over what's in your immediate Instagram feed. And if something is going to, you know, ruffle up your feathers or something upsets you or influences you in a bad way, you know, you still have the ability to kind of take charge of what you listen to and what you follow. And I think, yeah, taking a bit of charge over your social media, regardless if you're a health professional or someone trying to seek information, can be really helpful in making sure that what you're seeing aligns with your values and your goals.
Yeah, I think let's wrap that up there. That's a really good episode. I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts. If you listen to this, drop us a comment below or shoot us a message or let us know your thoughts. I'd love to know, now that we're talking about this and the jack is kind of out of the box, what do you think about it? And what do you think about health professionals on social media? You don't even have to be a health professional. Just spreading health information on social media. What's the best way to go about it? I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts, but thanks guys for coming on. I know we went a bit longer, a bit over time, but that was really good. And I'll catch you guys for the next episode.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jordy.
And there it is, another episode of the TFD Performance Podcast. If you like this episode and you enjoy our content, then you'll absolutely love our new TFD Performance Hub. This is an educational platform where ourselves and other top-level coaches will be teaching courses about our specialties at an absolute fraction of the price that it would cost you to hire us. If you are interested, then head to performancehub.thefightdietitian/sign-up and drop in your details. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and if you follow along our socials at @the_fightdietitian, you can see all of the best bits from our podcast episodes. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the TFD Performance Podcast.